Hi, I'm Jan Beatty. Tonight's episode of Prosody contains some adult content. Listener discretion is advised. Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Bernadette Alsummer. Hi, Bernadette. How
are
you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Happy to have you here. It's been a while that we've been talking about this, so let me tell them who you are. Bernadette Alsummer studied poetry at the University of Pittsburgh with Jeff Oakes and Barbara Edelman. She received a Master's of Library and Information Science from the University of Pittsburgh and currently works from the University's Office of Institutional Advancement. Alsummer has participated in the Mad Women in the Attic and other private workshops. Her poems have appeared in Pittsburgh City Paper and in two chapbooks entitled Blue Notebooks and The Strangest Things I've Ever Seen. She lives in the South Side with her husband Brad Keller, co-founder of the Pittsburgh Monologue Project. Okay. Well, you're going to read some poems. Are these from your chapbooks or?
No, these are all new.
Okay, great.
In France, surprises are lingerie related. It slips around me like water, white antique satin with silk inserts at the sides and black lace trim at the bust. The double velvet straps lie flat over my shoulders. It doesn't look vulgar or push. It just shapes. It holds my breast in a Parisian mix of sex, satin, and black couture lace. It's divine. It's expensive. The sales girl offers the kind of advice every girl in a fitting room draped in frilled pink curtains on the Rue de Saint-Pierre should know. Well then, you must marry a rich man. Rodeo bra. Fastened in front, swung round, arms lassoed through the straps, heave and buck, bend over, lift each breast into its cup, adjust, bind, hogtie, pull hard, harder. Shoulders slumped, skin rubbed red, the imprint of underwire across the back. Branded, B-O-O-B. Round 'em up and push 'em out. Nice rack. Like ribs seasoned, greased up. He licks between the cracks, his hands flailing at the triple tiered hooks and bars. 34D Notori Lace Bra, $78. With a tape measure and cold fingers, she assessed my chest, left me topless in the dressing room. Sagged and slumped, my breast shivered, goosebumps covered freckles. I saw something deep blue, then a lace butterfly front came through the curtain. Her hand and arm appeared. She held the bra up high, twirling the hanger. "It's a demi-cup," she said. She had me bend over, lifting each breast into the cups, before hooking the back. Straps adjusted, I rose up, arched my back, rolled my shoulders, lifted my chin as my hands wiggled the underwire. I became the beautiful, buxom woman every expensive bra promises. No bulges in the underarm, no flab under the back strap. Belly rolls pulled up into a pinup silhouette. "Go ahead," she said. "You can exhale." Welcomed. Welcomed by the further sag of my father's jowls and the thickening lenses of his glasses. Reminds me of just how old he's getting, even if he still stands taller than me. But not as tall as I picture him and his habits. Wetting his index finger to pick up lone crumbs off the kitchen floor and to turn each page of Reader's Digest. If I put on 3-inch heels, we can face each other eye to eye until my stilettos sink in the backyard at the family picnic, grounded, dirt finding its way between my toes. This is another, I would, I guess, home poem, like the last one. Okay. After a weekend visitation, I took my shoes off on the porch, my socks just as dirty, the only pair I had at my father's, where I spent the night in a sleeping bag. The house, its contents, and primary custody went to my mother. I found her crouched over on her knees in the bedroom they once shared. She was picking up crumbs off the area rug. The specks deposited in a tissue, she began smoothing the fringe, maneuvering each strand with her right hand while her left protected the strings already adjusted.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. My guest tonight is the poet Bernadette Alsamer. Okay, so I really want to talk about the bra poems.
Okay.
And how, I don't know, how did you stumble upon this this series of poems?
I was actually reading an article in the style section of the New York Times and about this woman who went to France to buy this expensive bra, and she was this whole article, and the language she was using was so beautiful. So I kind of highlighted the sentences and the verbs and, you know, the things I was really connected to. And then I started this collage kind of poem with all of them. And I kind of got the France poem, the mm-hmm. France bra poem. Mm-hmm. And then something my mother said. She calls my bras rodeo bras.
Really?
Yeah. She says I round them up and push them out. So I'm like, well, hey,
that's great.
That's a poem. So then it just went from there.
Has she heard that poem?
No, she hasn't.
Oh, you have to.
Oh, yeah.
You have to. Well, also, I wanted to talk about the sort of challenge or delight, I don't know, of writing a series of poems. And when you sit down to write them now, do you feel, you know, pressure, or it's just sort of a fun thing that you're doing?
It's fun. The first one I tried, there were so many ideas I had about bras that it naturally became a series. So if I feel like I need to write a bra poem, like it's time for another one, I just kind of go back to those original notes and see what I haven't tried yet.
Yeah. I mean, more seriously, it's a really important thing to write about, I think. And a lot of unexpressed moments are in these poems mm-hmm. that women are very familiar with, the dressing room moments.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's terrific. But also, other things are happening there, I think. And I was interested in sort of like the methodical description in some of them. You do this, you do this. But then it seems at moments to get into a sort of kitsch sensibility, too. Can you talk about that for a minute? Do you know what I mean? That there's almost the directions, you know, a very close description.
Yeah. Well, I think some of that goes back to a lot of bras, I think of as apparatus.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, they're, you know, they have certain construction and they're designed a certain way and they're supposed to do a certain thing. And so you have to almost think about it like that, mm-hmm. that you have to follow these directions to achieve this look or this shape.
Mm-hmm.
At least I do, because if you think too much about it, or if you, you know, put all your hopes and dreams into this bra, and, you know, you're going to have that body you've always wanted. I mean, it can drive you crazy.
Yeah, and it seems like, in a way, it's attacking some of that cultural, you know, baggage about, it's a bad word there, but baggage about, you know, what a bra could do for a woman
yeah.
and all that stuff. I can't use the word I'm thinking of, but you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's oppressive.
Mm-hmm. And I read somewhere that like 70% of women are wearing the wrong bra size.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So your poetry is.
So it's. I mean,
speaking
it's,
back.
Yes, it's
to
a
that.
Cultural issue.
It is really okay. And I noticed a really big difference in tone when you moved to the what you referred to as your home poem. So
mm-hmm.
maybe you could read a few more.
Sure.
Other poems.
Okay. This is another home poem. Just a little explanation. I'm originally from Williamsport, Pennsylvania, which is middle of the state, and it's a pretty small town, and most of my family still lives there. There's only a few of us who've moved away, and not very far. I mean, I'm the furthest one, except for my brother, who lives across the country. So it's odd going back, and this poem is sort of addressing that. Now that I no longer live there, the air is dry in my hometown, and tap water tastes clean. Famous for something small, as the sun shines a bit too bright. First lumber barons, then metal wire workers. Not all the roads are paved. Certain stoplights are ignored. Front room windows stay open at night. A few street signs have blown off their poles. Families have dinner watching TV. I remember which street to turn up for church. Living room lights give off a haze on the sidewalks, familiar as a groove in a stone, as if I were 16 again, worn deeper each year, out to prove I wasn't ugly or awkward, reminiscing on a boy and a can of beer. The next two poems are another series, brother poems. Some are directly related to my actual brother, and it's just a metaphor for some of the others. So, the night I stopped my brother, his punch usually knocked me down. After 2 weeks of heroin and Twinkie binging, he had lost his push. Cold sweat ran down his sunken cheeks and bearded chin. He slammed against my chest as I blocked the front door of our mother's house. His shoulders thin as a warped wire hanger couldn't get past my body. His hand shook, using the car keys as a weapon. One key thrashed open my wrist. Blood stained both our necks and shirts as I wrestled him to the floor. That's how I got the white, sickle-shaped scar over my wrist. And this next brother poem incorporates something I'm trying to do more of, is reference movies and use them within the action of the poem. So this is a successful one. My brother goes to jail. The TV played an old John Wayne movie. I love this stuff, he said. Reminds me of the Saturday morning westerns Dad watched. His arms mapped out trails of track marks and black dotted puncture towns. Big Jake with Maureen O'Hara. That's my favorite John Wayne movie. The Duke heads a posse to rescue his grandson, kidnapped by bandits. His second offense, possession with intent to sell. The lawyers and judge whispered at the bench, no witnesses, no testimonies. 2 years in county prison, cuffed and about to be taken by the sheriff, he kissed my cheek. The Duke shot his way through the bad guy's hideout, grabbed the boy, and rode like hell. The next few poems I'm going to read are imitation poems, and I reference the poet I'm imitating. Waiting, after Irene McKinney. I don't mind waiting, except for the seasons to change in the channel, and sometimes a change of location. I don't mind change, nothing much does, only I do, or more like resign myself a bit further to lost amazement. Tonight, flipping between talk shows and infomercials. The incredible bullet mixer, only $49.99, just a phone call away. 7 different muffins, sauces, frozen drinks, omelets, meat seasonings, batter, espressos, salad dressings, cracker spreads, mixed in less than 20 seconds. Seems necessary for a world of infinite choices and deals, made, broken, and rehashed by the time it takes for fads to occupy the daily news, which I usually don't watch. But it doesn't take much to see. My eyes are open when I'd rather be asleep or resting my eyelids. But not so much at times. I'm restless, anxious from an overload of television numbing the blood. The surround sound buzzes too loudly for sleep, and change creeps up while staying tuned for something better. Okay. Another imitation poem. And this was a harder one to write. I'd like to do imitations because I feel that they help me enter a poem in a different way, start a poem in a different way. And this was an example of that, and I found it difficult, but it worked out. Your Bedside, after Milena Moerling. At your bedside, at 3 a.m., I watch your eyelids flutter, dreaming when I slit your throat. Sheets and blankets, your pajamas and pillow all red. Blood keeps spilling. It floods the floor up to my knees, then thighs, as I grab for the bedpost before being sucked into the undertow.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Bernadette Ulsamer. Okay, I have to say, I love the tone of a lot of your poems. You know, it seems sort of jovial and inviting in a way, and I think because of a lot of the popular culture references. Mm-hmm. But then there's this sort of river of loss or longing underneath a lot of the poems.
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting combination. It reminds me of Denise Duhamel's work.
Oh, thank you.
A little. But can you talk about how you create this this inviting sort of poem and still evoke those feelings?
Well, I think the images and pop culture references already have that. And I'm just, you know, examining it. We live in a world where there's like TV and music and podcasts and internet and eBay and all these things. And yet at the same time, we're not seeing that human connection as much as before. And I feel disconnected to people because of these things. And so those images within themselves, you know, on the surface, they're shiny and bright and happy. But once you get into it, mm-hmm. you know, if you look a little deeper, it's there. So I'm just looking deeper and mm-hmm. writing it down.
Mm-hmm. Especially in the Irene McKinney mm-hmm. imitation where you have the mixer coming in.
That's a real thing. That's a real infomercial. Mm-hmm. And it was insane.
I know. They always are.
Yeah. What was these, like, this husband and wife at their kitchen, and they had this variety of house guests that these, and you could tell they were trying to play to all these different demographics. Like, no two people would have all these other kinds of people in their home. Like, there was, there was an African-American person and a Puerto Rican person, and, like, this old, I assume, Jewish lady with a cigarette and a bad wig and, you know, talking about a cup of coffee, and it was
talking
just,
about a mixer.
Yeah, talking about the mixer and how she wants coffee, and this one wants that, and so it just. And I was hungover when I was watching it, so I'm sure that
colored it. Yeah,
projected something onto it. So,
yeah. Even in the brother poem, mm-hmm. which your brother poems tend to be more sad and more emotionally evocative, and John Wayne shows up.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Is that something that happens in the revision of your poems?
Definitely. With My Brother Goes to Jail, I wrote two poems. I wrote the John Wayne poem about this movie that I liked, Big Jake, and and then I wrote this poem about my brother and him going to jail and him being out west, and then I made that connection of the west and western, and mm-hmm. so, and then I've just kind of jammed in the different lines mm-hmm. within the stanza and went from there.
It seems like this idea of collage, or maybe jamming lines is another way to say it, is really important to you as a writer.
Mm-hmm. It helps me sort things out, so to speak, because, you know, you have those different thoughts running parallel or over each other, and separating them helps me focus on exactly what these thoughts, these meanings, this language, these images, what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as interesting by themselves. So you have to bring them back to that overlapping, that mm-hmm. parallel.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And I like the, you know, feeling of piling up some of that in your poems, and even having things happen simultaneously. I think it's great.
Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. More poems.
Okay. This is another imitation. And this is a fun poem. I think it's a fun poem. This is your brain on fruit, after Robin Ben. Brain says, smell this. Brain says, orange or apricot? Juicy, almost too sweet, licking the pit flavor. Locally grown, and I don't want to wash off the skin. Taste the dirt, the insect poop, the picker's hands plucking it, caressing it, smoothing it all over. Brain asks, when was the last time you got laid? Laid, screwed, banged, do me, dooby-dooby-doo-wop. My mother said only sluts lose it in the back seats of cars. Sluts, mutts, putts, putzing around the produce section for something different, exotic, fresh. Brain says, just get some. Iceberg and cherry tomatoes. Okay, another imitation poem. Kind of in the same vein. Do Easy, A Lesson in Handling, after William Burroughs' Exterminator. Consider the weight of it, how much force it needs to get in and out. Consider shape, stubby at first. Texture, sinuous ripples. Function, limited. Don't tug or pull too swiftly. Feel your fingers around it. Guide the fleshiest section smoothly along. Use your mouth as a landing pad. Fit it silently and surely into place. If not secure, it's bound to jump out at you, trip you, slap across your cheek, or poke you and tangle in your hair. When you put it down, separate yourself cleanly. Practice the movement if unsuccessful at first. Remember, a nervous finger that won't let go may twitch hot semen across your face. Moving away from the imitation poems, but in a same theme. Soaked Night. In a packed meat market bar, I watch her dancing, dressed as a rebellious schoolboy, like the guys I dated in high school. Spiked hair, lanky-limbed, beer in hand, out to get laid. I make my way next to her dark eyes, scanning my body. Our thighs almost touch. Her hips dip unsure. The beat cracking just wide enough to get in her range. More boy than girl, she takes my hand, furling me out, then back into a ready mouth. No names or numbers, just tongues and fingers, splitting open pants in this soaked night. This is one of the first poem in a hopefully a new series, a traffic series. So, at the wheel. Brake lights glare red off the tiled ceiling in the tunnel. Traffic backed up past the bridge. In the rear view mirror, I notice fine lines under my eyes. Four rows of cars packed in underground. The graffitied walls look sticky, wet. The air conditioner broken. I sweat through my blouse. In front of the wheel, as I was in front of a computer, stuck nearly 30 minutes in the gas and grit.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Bernadette Ulsamer, reading her poetry. I wanted to ask a little bit about the sexuality. I mean, it seems like it's in every poem in one way or another. Like it's just breathing and cannot be denied. Is that something that has sort of crept into your poetry? It was there from the beginning.
It's crept in. I think it's always been a part of my personality, so to speak. In college, you know, in the undergraduate, you know, I kind of went there, but I wasn't ready to tackle those things or introduce them. So, you know, growing older, getting more mature about it, it's kind of I've been able to use it more.
Yeah, well, I think it's very hard to have sex in a poem and not have it feel gratuitous or to not use it for shock value. And I think you definitely succeed in that. But I also wanted to comment on the people in your poems. Not everybody has a lot of people, and there are a lot of characters. I mean, there is a story-like feel. Just a lot of people.
Yeah.
And
Well, I just relate to people. I mean, I see more than just a person. Everyone has a story. And my husband with the Pittsburgh Monologue Project, and I've written pieces for them and we've performed them. Everyone has a story, especially in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And if you just take the time to listen and talk to them, you'll hear that story. And you'll be, you know, and it will give, you know, add to your day. It'll have something to take away with.
Yeah.
So I find people way more interesting
yeah.
than places or ideas.
It's in there. Yeah. That's great. Okay, we have time for one or two more.
Okay. I'm going to do another imitation. And this is a little off for me, just something different but fun again. It began with scarves in his sister's closet. Velvet Goldmine, 1998, Ton Haynes director, after D.A. Powell. It began with scarves in his sister's closet. His, an impoverished boyhood, frozen in the outlands of father, not distant enough, with strap in hand. Obtuse mother, smiles, smoldering cigarettes. Cutting a peacock figure, he played a tough knave, frightened by the fact of being taken for a suburbanite. No doubt of that, in pinstripe trousers and a fingertip-length coat. He left the dropper full of clotted blood hang from his blue arm. All the queers and con men watched him penetrate his ego. A gorgeous monster, abashed and rugged, the fellow lacerates my skirts, not accidentally. Have at it, we splay. Exact half girl, a boy toy, a best friend, a loose end, a way back or a means to get in, an activism, a revolution, a cop-out. We took hold of a uniform catalog, a secret police force, looking for bodies, deeds, dreams, dandies, daffodils, dipsadoos, deals, doormats. Eventually, the music sparked, featured glam bands of effervescent, neon blue hair. Eventually, sex, sanitized, became the only safe we knew.
It's the poetry of Bernadette Alsamer. Thank you so much. It was fun.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Joseph Wilk and Lauren Wolf. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody here on Independent Public Radio, 91.3 WYEP.